What's happening, everybody? Welcome to a Wednesday edition of Texans All Access from the Hyundai Texans Radio Studio. John Harris alongside the voice of the Texans, Mark Vandermeer. Mark, I did the math just now as I was introing the show. April 25th is the draft. Today is April 17th. We're 8 days away.
That's very good math.
8 days away. I can do math.
I didn't think that was going to be a problem for you. Uniform reveal coming up soon enough. Tuesday.
6 days. Yep. 6 days.
6 days to that. Oh, by the way, I have my Mark Vandermeer Junior Achievement Golf Tournament on Monday.
Oh, wow.
Which is not a celebrity tournament. So if you are a celebrity and you're listening and wondering why I did not invite you, that's why. It's not a celebrity tournament. It benefits Junior Achievement. I've been doing it for 20 years now.
Yeah.
It feels like three. But I've been doing it for 20 years, and thanks to Apache Industrial Services and S&H Manufacturing and all my friends at Group One Auto and everybody else who sponsored the event. Looking forward to that on Monday. There's my plug.
That is awesome. That is very, very cool. I'm glad you have continued to do that. I, Monday, will be over at KBO talking to our ticketing people about the draft, doing our annual download. As it's called.
Wait, did I not get invited to that? No, I wouldn't have been able to make it anyway because I have my tournament.
It's on Monday.
For
some
reason,
you have your tournament.
My tournament's on draft week. It was the kind of thing where we couldn't get any other day. So, I'll have to take it. Now, I didn't know we were going to do the reveal next week when we booked the tournament last May, right? Right after the last one.
Yeah.
So, I didn't know what to do. I thought, okay, I'll just deal with it. And then I thought we were going to have a reveal party on Monday, and I thought this is going to be a big problem for me. But it's not. It's all going to happen. It's a huge week. Oh, Andre's golf tournament is next Wednesday. The Brothers in Arms golf tournament.
So the 24th?
With Warren Moon and Vince Young.
Yeah.
Patty Smith.
Holy cow.
It is on Wednesday at Carlton Woods, and it is a busy week, but it's a great week, Johnny.
Yeah.
Because the draft, as you know, it's not just Thursday night. Friday night draft party at Avenida Houston. It is 3 days of peace, love, and music. Oh, no, that was Woodstock. It's 3 days of NFL draft selections, and it's awesome.
It is awesome. By the end of it, I'm pretty sapped. I got to admit, I got to get my juice. I mean, I'm excited for it, don't get me wrong, but every time that I finish my draft guide, there is this just release and letdown because I'm going 150 miles in the left lane, and all of a sudden I come to a complete and total, like, once I put it in the guide, it's like, it's done. Like, all right, I'm done. Now, there's obviously some players I'm, you know, still looking at that, you know, I'm just curious about. Like, hey, I got this guy rated here, and I don't want to change the ranking right now. Juice Scruggs is one of those. I don't know why. I was really intrigued with Juice last year, and so I watched him after my guide was put out. I thought, dang it, I'm too low. I'm way too low on him. I had him, like, way, way, way down, which I shouldn't have. But this is that time of the year where I'm hitting the brakes this week. Which is good. So hopefully I get rejuvenated by Thursday. But I love it. But you know what I was doing 2 years ago? I was closing. I remember when we were closing on the sale of my house.
Oh. That was 2 years ago.
And the closing was on April 28th, the day of the draft. I'm like,
jeez, I can't believe you did that.
So basically, with my family out in LA, did everything. My family got back, kind of helped pack up what we had left in the house. I, that morning, 2 years ago, was in the house doing the final cleanup at the house to get out.
And then went to the draft party.
And then went home, showered, and then went to the draft.
Right, because we had the draft party at Miller Outdoor Theater.
That's right.
First round. Last year as well, first round.
Yes.
Now, we're on the air every round. So we'll be on the air with Andre on Thursday
next week
here in the Hyundai Texans Radio Studio. Then Friday at Avenida Houston with Seth Payne.
So our TVs are all, we got to make sure our TVs are good. We got the right, you know, so we can see the picks. We handle all the audio. We don't need to hear it. We just need to see, like, okay, who's the pick? And who is it going to be? And that noise, that beautiful noise. I shouldn't say noise. Noise implies something that's grating to the nerves. That beautiful sound. It's so nice, and I can't wait for that. That is 8 days away. Last night, Mark, I wasn't able to get Monday night. Was that Monday night? No, what are we on? Wednesday? The days are all running together. But on Monday, I did a Texas Audio Jukebox of C.J. Stroud. And I had said I was going to do D'Amico, but I had got so much good stuff from C.J., I'm like, man, I'm going to run out of time. So I said, you know what? I will save D'Amico for later, and we hit a few of those last night. But it got me thinking. First of all, congratulations to D'Amico. Senior Bowl Hall of Famer for 2024. Really cool stuff that he gets inducted. So I wanted to make sure we hit that.
Well, you know what the headline here is? there's a Senior Bowl Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Who knew?
Yeah, I did because I follow Jim Nagy. You know, I love going to the Senior Bowl. And I got a feeling and the Senior Bowl is going to be a I just always love the picks that we make from the Senior Bowl because I have been there to see those guys ahead of time, and we'll see if there's going to be one this year. But like last year, I got a chance to see Tank Dell up close.
God's
are
good. Nico
the year before that. They're always players coming from the Senior Bowl that are always end up here, and it's always fun that you had that advanced look. But I got to thinking about D'Amico and just listening, and I was listening to Sean and Seth, and they were playing back some of his responses to questions and such. And I just got to thinking about the calm and the poise that he exhibits that seemingly filters through to everything that is done with the organization. And I mean, I know that's just his way. And I know he's got fire, he's got passion, he's got all that. But it just feels like that calm leads to leadership that players respond to now maybe more than ever. Your thoughts?
Well, I observe him coaching, and I see how technically involved he is. We see, by and large, the fans see in media, we see the smile, the positivity, the energy, all of it. I think the physical presence is a factor as well.
Yes.
There's something about that. It looks like he could still put on the pads and play.
He could.
There's something about that. Now, Dom Capers was, in fact, if we do the contest, we'll do it right now. Most buff Texans coaches. Let's do the power rankings. D'Amico, number one.
Yeah.
Dom Capers, two.
Are you talking just head coaches?
Head coaches.
Okay. Yeah. That's two.
I think
we should stop there because then we start ranking the rest of them.
Oh, and they're going to get upset?
They're going to get upset.
I know. Well, I know who's fourth and fifth, but
okay.
But I think, well, I shouldn't say it like that.
Yeah.
I think there's a tie for third with Kubiak and Lovie Smith. Lovie was in good
Lovie
shape.
Lovie was great shape.
Good shape. Great shape. Now, he was older when he entered the building as the head coach than Kubiak was, obviously. But I got to give Lovie, so maybe we're grading on a curve here a little bit, but I have to give Lovie tremendous, tremendous credit for being so well-defined at his age. And I think it kept him going. You know, that was his energy source, or one of them anyway. But D'Amico's number one. Observing D'Amico, Coach Johnny, it's the whole package, right?
Yep.
He is enthusiastic, motivational, coaches with joy, wants his players to play with reckless abandon and joy, yet attention to detail, and somehow he puts it all together. There's this infectious quality about the way he is. And I'm going to give you four letters, WWDD. What would D'Amico do?
Yeah.
And it applies to almost everything in your life. Next time you have a perplexing issue, think, what would D'Amico do? And very often the answer will just bloop, come right to you. It's that good.
Yeah,
D'Amico Ryans. I'm barely joking at that last one, and I just love the way he is. When we hired him, you knew it was going to be good. It's even better than your initial expectations were, and we're all eager to see where it goes from here. The thing about this season and this team and all future seasons is it's tough to get to where you want to go. Can they do it? To get to that stage again when you're in the divisional round and have a chance to advance, the amount of work and the amount of good things that have to happen to get you there, it's voluminous, but I'm here for the journey. We all are. Let's see how they play it.
I always think about states of matter when it comes to those things. Like, for example, an ice cube to melt into water. It isn't just, oh, it's got to get to a certain temperature. There is an amount of energy it takes to change the state of matter. So, like, oh, well, to go win a Super Bowl, well, you got to get to the AFC Championship game, and then you got to get to the Super Bowl. You got to win one more game. But it's like, it's not just to win that one more game. It's not just, oh, you got to score more than the other opponent. I mean, there's so much energy that goes into just winning that one more game.
I love the way you worded that.
A different type of energy than there is to win a regular season game.
But go back to, you got to win one more, at least.
Yeah, you got to win one more.
One more, and you really want to win three more, right?
Correct.
But you really have to win 11 more. Think about this. We're starting over.
Yeah.
You got to win those 10, 11 games to win the division and the right ones. You've got to win those games. So you have zero right now. And I know everybody knows this intellectually, but you want to talk about quantum physics. You have to get the whole thing fired up again.
Yes, exactly.
Got to go win 10 games. But you can only do that by winning week one and taking it from there.
Right. Even more so than you did last year. Speaking of, if you do that enough, you end up being a dynasty. You finally got through.
Right,
How far did you get?
All right. I'm through episode 9.
Okay.
And now, now I see what the Patriot people are complaining about, or those who are siding with Coach Belichick in this little drama we have going on here. Johnny, the fact that they don't address Robert Kraft and his little issue.
Correct.
And maybe I shouldn't call it a little issue.
Dalliance.
But the fact that they don't go there at all.
At all.
Is a big problem to me. Because, okay, fine, you want to go to, you have to go to Deflategate and Spygate and Aaron Hernandez and all that, but you're going to leave that part out?
Right.
That doesn't make sense to me. And I was listening to a podcast about documentaries. It's called The Town, this podcast. It's all media stuff, and it's really well done. And the host, I'm forgetting his name right now. You'll have to forgive me, but it's part of the Ringer Network. He was talking about documentaries with an expert, and he was complaining about the lack of journalism in most of these, or many of these documentaries.
Right.
And the guest, the woman who created a bunch of HBO documentary series and things like that, she said, it's okay, because sometimes it's an autobiography, right? And in an autobiography, you wrote it about yourself. You're going to put in what you want to put in. You have final cut. A lot of these documentaries are like that. The subject has final cut. And that's okay. But I think for this, if you're going to go there, you got to go there, right? They don't gloss over. It's not, in other words, what's the NFL series? America's Game. On the Super Bowl winners.
Right.
All right, they're going to leave some stuff out of
there. Sure.
In all likelihood.
Of course.
But you in this, not you, them, in this situation, covered things in depth that were negative, but we're going to leave this part out. I have a problem with that, and I also have a problem with this. With Coach Belichick, Malcolm Butler not playing in that Super Bowl, the loss to the Eagles, capping the 2017 season, was a big deal. They treat it like they benched Brady or something.
Right.
Like they benched Jerry Rice if they were the 49ers. Like they benched Deion Sanders at corner in his prime or something like that. Look, Malcolm Butler's a nice player. We all know that. And maybe they would have done better. Maybe they would have won with him. But it wasn't as big a deal to me as they make it seem in this documentary. Let me ask you this. How well was Butler playing that year? I know he started a bunch of games, maybe all of them.
I didn't think he was great that year,
to be
honest.
You didn't think he was great?
But he played almost every snap throughout the year.
All right, so there it is.
But that's the thing.
And he should have played. And it should have been addressed. I'm not saying sweep it under the rug.
Right.
But they acted like that was the reason why they lost to the Philadelphia Eagles.
And the reaction from Coach Belichick was, hey, we've already talked about that sort of thing. Whereas everybody else was very happy to talk about, like, WTF.
Yeah.
He was, you know, look, we've already talked about that. And he's like, no, Coach, we haven't. And then Belichick just looked in the camera like, yeah, okay, well, this is my answer. And it's silence. And it just, the whole thing really, just the more I've thought about it. And, you know, I was watching, they would come out Friday, basically Thursday night. So I would get to a point where I would stop looking at draft prospects. And about 10:30 at night, I would flip it on. So I'm already tired, but I'm, you know, ornery and cranky at that time of the night. And so I'm watching it, and I'm like, wow, holy cow. And at one point, I remember thinking, this is a freaking hit piece.
It is a hit piece.
It's a hit piece. I got really frustrated.
And they act like, oh, it's a disaster. Look, you want to win the Super Bowl when you get there. I understand this, especially them, anybody. But they act like it was a 2-14, or in these days, 2-15 season because of whatever. Belichick sucked that much.
Right.
And he was so hard to play for. I guess he was hard to play for. But here's one thing. Why do players go back to him? Trent Brown, other players.
Well, that's
they
what
return
players
to
said.
Belichick.
That's what players said after the documentary. They're like, whoa, 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 whoa. Then Rodney Harrison was one of the ones that spoke up. And I was going to say loudest ones. I don't mean it like that, but Rodney Harrison was like, he was on, I can't remember whose pod. Oh, he's with one of the McCourty brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I sat with them for 6 hours and I got a 5-second piece.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
And, you know, the more that you're hearing from the players, you know, Edelman has a podcast. He talked about it. He had Matthew Slater on. Those two talked about it. They had Ty Law on. Those two talked about it. They've been talking about it. And the general thought is, yeah, he's tough, and he's tough to play for, and he's demanding. But my God, we won.
They got results.
And
they
I've got rings on my shelf that
rings,
are because he was our head coach.
Playoff money.
Right.
Legendary status in New England, if not other places. You know, they have Danny Amendola, who was here, obviously. Rex is not in it. They don't interview
not
Rex.
Not see Rex, no.
It's funny because I was having a conversation with my buddy Mike Corey from ESPN. He was at UMass. He and his friend are making a UMass documentary about the Calipari teams.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
In the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he
you're
said,
UMass teams.
He said they want to interview me.
Right, right, of course.
And I said, I'll do it, but they've already talked to every player and Calipari. And I'm thinking, what am I going to add to this? I can add the business side, sure, and the broadcast side, and a few other things for perspective.
Right.
And he said, no, no, we want you. But trust me, for every one sound bite you see, there's like an hour of video, yep, that they shoot that they're
at
not going to need.
Yep.
And I'm willing to do it, but it's just kind of funny that way. I'd love to be in it, don't get me wrong, but I'm thinking, you already got a lot of guys.
It's interesting because there's an article that came out today, Don Van Adder and Seth Wickersham talking about the Falcons job with Belichick and, you know, what Kraft's role was in that. And I read that article, and one of the things that was in that article, two things stood out. Number one, apparently, Dave Tepper, the owner of the Panthers. Carolina Panthers, apparently he sifts through all the play calling data after the game so he can bring it up with coaches. Oh my God, no. Oh, that's just miserable.
Ooh, that's rough.
That's rough. The other one that he brought up was that apparently the Krafts have slowly but surely distanced themselves from this documentary. And if you noticed at the end of it,
when it says Kraft Productions, doesn't it?
That's exactly right. It says Kraft Productions at the very end. But he's now apparently moving away from it because I guess it was a bit much. Because that was the first thing for people that saw it originally, saw the whole thing originally, and then obviously wrote about it to promo it, all that kind of stuff. I remember reading somebody say, this is Robert Kraft's resume for the Hall of Fame, yeah, basically.
And it plays that way.
And it plays exactly. It plays exactly that way.
That era, look, I hate them like poison, don't get me wrong.
Of course.
But I respect what they did.
Yes.
They had 2 decades of total
that
dominance.
That successful. And I know people are like, yeah, but Brady and Belichick at the end. Name one marriage that's perfect for 20 freaking years.
Oh, it was a disaster when we won the Super Bowl only 13-3.
Yeah.
You won the Super Bowl?
We didn't have much joy celebrating it, but you loved that ring though, didn't you?
Yeah.
You did.
I'd love
so,
one.
There you go. Oh, it's good discussion. All right. We got our guy Doug Vosick, Senior Vice President of Marketing Communications and Ticketing, coming up next. I wonder what we're going to talk about. Oh, yeah, some unis. That's next on Texans All Access. Welcome back to this Wednesday edition of Texans All Access from the Hyundai Texans Radio Studio. I am your host, John Harris, football analyst, sideline reporter. And as I teased at the end of the last segment, boy, we got a lot of stuff happening next week. Obviously, the draft party going to be on Friday, where we will have a contingent down at Avenidas Houston right there in front of George R. Brown. Looking forward to that. I always love the draft party. There's going to be obviously action going on that night, all kinds of stuff. But a few days prior to that, there is a uniform reveal. If you didn't know, Doug Vosick, Senior Vice President of Marketing Communications and Ticketing, joined Mark and I to talk about all things uniform right here.
Doug, welcome to the studio once again. I think this is your third or fourth visit. I'm losing count since you started here many years ago. Welcome.
We might count differently. I think I've been a very, very limited guest so far, and I cherish the moment. So let's rock today.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Would you like to be a more frequent guest?
You know,
because there's some people that don't like to sit in that chair and they don't like to talk.
Everyone appreciates an outlet sometimes.
Sometimes
it's just very variable in how many that means. That's all.
And you mentioned the word outlet. That's interesting.
And what the occasion is,
yes,
right?
Maybe. I'm just the marketing guy, right?
Well, we do talk marketing sometimes here. We'll talk about Super Bowl commercials the day or two after, things like that, major shifts, how things are moving in the industry. It's very cool. Speaking of things moving in the industry, there's a rumor that the Texans might have new uniforms unveiled next week.
You heard that? How'd that leak? Oh, leak. Ooh, yeah. That's another one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. What a day. The 23rd. It's almost here.
Yeah, it is almost here. But let's talk about this. And let's start with the leak. We're not going to start at the beginning. We're going to start with the leak. And Cal McNair addressing that leak very quickly with a much better photo than the one that was leaked. But that had to be a very interesting day in the organization, Doug.
It was. And dare I go like this and go, was that leak intentional?
Oh, you're asking the question.
Because it turned out good at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
So can I give a little background on the leak?
Sure, please do.
So, you know, I think our friends on various media outlets had a little fun with the leak, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how the model looked and, you know, the bad photo and all those kinds of things. And, you know, part is like, shame on us. We had so many security measures. We took everyone's phones. Mm-hmm. We put them in Ziploc bags. Like,
right.
Someone must have snuck someone in somewhere, right?
Yep.
So, you know, it does happen. But what a lot of people don't realize, or maybe didn't give us a little grace on, is that during those days, those are our shoot days. It's when the players come in,
right?
See the uniforms the first time, and you get 6 to 7 of the guys to come in and spend 8 hours with you over 2 days shooting. Before the shoot, though, there's hours of work, meaning there's stand-in models so you can get the lighting right and get the smoke right when you see the one video,
yeah.
Right? There's stand-in models when you want to do just like employee previews, right? And things like that. So, yes, the leaked photo was a stand-in model, but in no way like the, ooh, check out the uniform guy, right? So, we didn't get so much grace on that one, but I get it. Everyone had to have some fun. But, yeah, it's a stand-in model to get stuff ready. Yeah, leave it at that. But what I would say to your question of like, yes, that thing went out, and maybe a couple of us were like, whoa, boy, it leaked. And it was a bad photo, right?
Mm.
Sometimes you get a leak and it's like the jersey hanging on a shelf at Dick's by accident. And it looks relatively good.
Right.
In this case, that was a bad photo. So honestly, it didn't take long. Within minutes, we're just sitting down with Cal and Hannah. And we said, hey, it leaked. It's unfortunate. Nothing we can do about it now, right? We got two choices, right? One is what I would say 97% of teams do is, la, 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 right? Nothing happened.
Nothing to see here.
Right? And you can see with the amount of new uniforms coming out across all these leagues now, leaks happen more and more. So many teams will just be like, yep, we got our plan. Oh, well. Yeah. We started quickly talking about, Cal, as part of your Fearless Evolution mantra for us, we've been doing a lot of things differently. And we've been starting to become very progressive in our marketing and our communication style. And, a progressive organization would get after it. A progressive organization that's fearless would say, let's respond, right, in a big way. And honestly, very quickly, the conversation switched to Cal being like, I really enjoy when I go on Reddit, right? Because he does once or twice a year.
Yep.
He intersects with the fans, does an AMA. It's usually around, right before the season starts. And he's like, I got a great platform there. It's been a lot of fun joking with the fans.
Yep.
Let's go on Reddit. And of course, and all of us were like, absolutely, Cal, let's go on Reddit. So it happened that quick, and within minutes, we're posting the real photo of Nico and Tank. We all know that photo looked 1,000 times better. The uniforms looked 1,000
right.
times better. And what you really saw was just phenomenal in the metrics of it. If you look at all the mentions that happened at the leak, call it down here. As soon as Cal went on Reddit, and we amplified, of course, through Twitter, the mentions were 4 or 5x just like that by putting out a good photo and doing it in a really cool way with Cal. So that was just the volume, just 4 or 5x. And then the flip side was the sentiment. When that leak came out, it was like 20% positive, 80% negative, right? It was bad. Cal puts out the real photo, and I'm not exaggerating, 80% positive, just like that. Yeah, a real photo with the players looking awesome and killer in those new unis. And like the mentions flipped, the sentiment flipped, and we're like, all right, like way to take, lemons into lemonade, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But, real quick work, got it done, and it was awesome work with Cal on that.
Doug, I always think about this when there's a project of this magnitude that you work on for, and I mean, you've been here over 2 years now, almost 2 years,
almost.
And I know that this has been a project that a lot of people have worked on, and I know that you've worked on it. I always imagine that sense of anxiety when you open a box to look at them for the first time. What were your thoughts when you opened the box and you looked at them for the very first time? What were your thoughts? What did you think?
It's not even opening the box, right? The McNairs were kind enough to invite a bunch of us with them to Beaverton.
Yeah.
So the first time we went to Nike headquarters is when we saw them. So they had the mannequins there. They had them draped. And then one by one, they pulled the drapes off, right?
Okay.
So, once you see the content that came out of that trip, you'll see Hannah and Cal's reaction, especially.
Yeah.
And even on one of the uniforms, Hannah getting a little lightheaded because she was so excited, right? For me, I'm a bit more of a calm, subdued
person. Were you nervous
person.
Or something like this?
No. At the end of the day, with a lot of this stuff, if you're working on a project that was driven by fan feedback, as long as you listened and listened in a real way, you have some confidence going into whatever you're going to see. And now we've kept talking about the four principles of design that went into this based upon the fan feedback. But that's literally what we briefed Nike on. So there's a level of confidence to a degree just because we listened. We were an organization that actually applied the research versus how it can go is like someone's got an opinion over there and someone's got an opinion over there because they have this title. That's what we did instead. But in this case, it was, what do the fans want? Sounds good. So I was pretty calm going into it. And knowing that when we approached the whole study from how do we make the most amount of fans happy in four different ways, we kind of knew that, hey, that's going to lead to bias, right?
Right.
Like, you might look at the away one and be like, yeah, I really like the away one. You might hate the alternate one. Mark might look at all four and go, right, ooh, Color Rush is for me. Home's not, right? Right. No different than me. Right. I'm like, ooh, alternate, Color Rush all day. Home and away, okay. So when you also think about it that way of like, myself nor anyone needs to love all four because it was intentionally made that you at least are going to like one or two based right upon your internal preference.
Which is probably every team. Every beloved team probably has a similar feel for their yeah uniforms, I would imagine. Doug Vosick, Senior Vice President of Marketing, Communications, Ticketing. Doug, how hard is it to ultimately decide, though? I got to think a lot of interesting stuff ends up on the cutting room floor. You have to really narrow it down. I know you have four, but my gosh, it had to be difficult.
Yeah, you know, we're very fortunate when you work with NFL and Nike that you get a depth of design. Mm-hmm. So if there's four uniforms, we probably looked at half a dozen for each. All small variations at times. We're not talking about radically different design right under each. So when you tell Nike, like, hey, the fans want some horns, that probably leads to five or six designs where maybe the horn's here, maybe yeah it's here, maybe all done in yeah different ways. So you go through a process with them with some fan input on which horn's the best horn, right?
Right.
And believe it or not, the amount of thought that goes into which horn is the best horn is crazy. From, hey, there were some fans that liked a horn coming off the shoulder and tapering in here. The reality is that's not how a bullhorn looks, right?
Right.
That's more of like a claw. So things that came off this way didn't look authentic to
over
a bullhorn.
Yeah.
Right? A bullhorn for us with a Spanish fighting bull is gonna curve out. Right?
Right.
Or when they're pointed down, it's going to be a little bit in, right?
Yeah.
So you end up looking at cutting room floor and saying, how many of these actually represent a bull? Mm-hmm. And you can see where we landed, obviously, in that the one that tapers up is more accurate to real life. So let's get as close as possible.
So the reveal is Tuesday, and that is going to be an incredible day. There are some, though, Doug, that think, should have done it a long time ago. Your thoughts?
I wish we could have. I wish we could have. You know, you just want to get this thing going and right get it out. The reality is you want all the variables to be ready. And when I say that, once you actually get your player inventory, we're only 8 weeks from launch, right? And that's what that yeah shoot was, where that leak yeah happened. So mm-hmm you need time to do all the creative work to launch versus like, hey, Nico, can you put that on over there? Let me take a picture and put it up. Maybe right some fans will be like, you should have done that anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So there's just part of it is the creative process, right? Right. Two is you are looking at the other side of it, which a fan sees a uniform. A fan wants to be able to purchase a uniform, right? Mm-hmm. We could even joke about last year, like we couldn't keep CJ jerseys in stock,
right?
Yeah. Right. So think about how many fans just want a CJ jersey, let alone one of the new jerseys,
right?
Right. So part of it is we are literally getting our shipments right now for retail. So we'll have them ready for Tuesday, but they're coming in now. So you can't launch early. Otherwise, you get fans to be like, I want the uniform.
Right.
Oh, I can't buy it anywhere. Like, you know, boo Texans, right?
Yeah.
So you also time it to that. And then third is if you can look at what happens in the NFL is you're collaborating with partners. And when you collaborate with partners, it's not just about your timeline. And if you look at it over the two-week span, there's four different teams launching jerseys. So you're trying to also work with your key partners, Nike and the NFL, to space those out so they're not one on top of each other.
Right. All right, so it's no secret that you set about having the most transparent, visible process ever in the history of a uniform change. And I probably worded that in a clunky way, but you did that. But what about some people who are complaining about, hey, why is this taking not only so long, like Johnny said, but everything's out there. Everything's out there for the public, except for the actual designs, but a lot of the talk about how this thing went down. Why is that important to relay that to the fans, Doug?
Are you referencing some of our friendlies out there that have said, you've been talking about this for a year and a half?
Maybe.
Where is it?
Is that, maybe.
Is that where we're going?
Could
okay.
Maybe.
Okay. I think, you know, if I can not be snarky and have fun about it, It's the reality of how we decided to run the process. Mm-hmm. Had we run the process without fans, we would have tucked away in a corner, briefed Nike and the NFL, not talked about it, right?
Right.
Come up a week or two before draft and said, hey, you may have heard there's new uniforms. We're confirming it. Here they are, right? Yeah. We decided to include fans. So when you decide to include fans and be transparent, you have to give updates. If you're not giving updates, you're not being transparent. So if you think about the past year and a half, there was a research phase a year and a half ago where we did go out and said, fans, we're thinking about updating uniforms. Here's how you can participate, focus groups, surveys, what have you. So there's a communication point, right, where you're talking and saying, we're doing this. So then you get all the research, and then 3 or 4 months later, you have results. So instead of hiding and just saying, all right, we're going to take those results and go work with Nike, we said, fans, here's what we heard. And that's where you heard those four things, right? Simple classic, modern and updated, embrace the bull, show H-Town some love, right? We went out after the research and said, that's what we heard. So there was another communication point around that. And then we were quiet for a while. That's when you're going through designs, you're going through samples. And the next point we really popped our heads up and spoke was when we had the actual player uniforms in for that shoot. And to be transparent and inclusive for that shoot, we invited a bunch of fans, a bunch of media members, and said, hey, this is not a media event. This is not an opportunity to take photos and ask questions, but you've been part of this process. Just come check them out. Come spend 5 minutes with us and look. So when you run the process of inclusive and transparent, if you're not giving updates, you're not delivering on that fan promise we made.
Yeah. I hope I asked this question in the right way, Doug. You are not from Houston, but
you got here as fast as you could.
But your use of Houston and H-Town really drove the identity of these uniforms, seemingly. And that was something that, from the day you walked in here, it was just H-Town. It's about Houston. It's about the city. Why did that kind of pull you in the way that it did, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I think I had a chance to sit down with a good friend, Sarge, last week, and he asked me similar questions. And, of course, he's got to throw out. He's like, Doug, you're not from here, right?
I know.
I'm just
but I just want people to understand who's driving. You know, Houston can be very provincial about its people not from Houston.
But Texas, they're good. Houston, we're inclusive. But a lot of us weren't born here, but got here as fast as we could, me included. You included.
I know. I was one of those.
All right.
It took a little while for people to get past my Wisconsin accent. You got past all that very, very quickly in some sense, but Houston really kind of drove it.
I'd say it's twofold. You know, I'll end on the more important one, right? Mm-hmm. You know, how I kind of really talked about it last week with Sarge is the fact that Houston and all of its diversity leads to a culture-rich city. And culture can be defined by people as many different things. But in my world, that's music. That's the arts. It's the creative sciences, right? It's food culture. It's cuisine. It's street art. It's tattoos. It's all those things. And inherently in my own DNA, like Doug Vosick as a human, not as an employee of the Texans, loves those things.
Yeah.
So for me, like, I land in a city where, you know, there's so much of personal interest tied to the culture that is driven by the diversity of the city that right away I feel at home, right? I feel like this is my spot, right? So that helped, right? Yep. It's a place where I fit, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not maybe in my original home, but it sure feels like home, right?
Right?
So there's part of that. Two is, I'd say, we have an amazing fan base. So my first month or two is like right at training camp. And, you know, I'm just like, oh, I'm just the new marketing guy. Fans wanted to talk to me. Right, fans are like, hey, you're the new marketing guy. Blah, blah, blah. And I think every day at training camp, I just found myself talking to 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 fans because they're so welcoming. And in those conversations, that's where they would start giving me a little bit of this feedback, right? I'm a native Houstonian, or I've been here 20 years. This is my home. And then we just talk about, what do you love about Texans? What do you not love? And they loved, you know, the original branding. They love being Texas inspired. They love that swagger that they have and that pride that they have. What they didn't love was they felt that there was a gap between the team and the city. That could be defined many ways, right? This team's done a lot of public good through our community foundation, but they weren't meaning that. They were meaning how you representing the diversity, how you embracing culture, and maybe the last from more of a, you know, cosmetic visual way, how are you showcasing our city?
Right.
Mm. Once they said that, that led to this whole area where you've seen us adapt anything from our game entertainment to some of the non-player faces that are part of the extended Texans fam, to updating uniforms and merch based upon how you become a little bit more connected to the city.
How do you gauge success Tuesday and moving forward from Tuesday upon the release of the new uniforms?
You know, success is a hard thing to define sometimes, because part of it is long game, right? Mm. Part of it is, hey, over the next couple years, how does the fan demand look on the uniforms? Which, when you say fan demand, you're really talking about retail sales, right? Ultimately, that's how the fan tells you, did you get one of the four right or multiple ones right? Because if they don't buy them, guess what? They probably didn't like them. So part of it is that, but sometimes that takes multi-year. We all know the way a uniform looks on the field, on repeated games, looks way different than some photos we put at launch, right?
Sure.
So part of it is the build over time,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you as a leader, you have to be willing to play the long game, right? In the short term, again, because we went into this of like something for everybody, we are prepared that there's going to be positive and negative, right? Feedback on it. So we're not even so worried about, oh, there's negative feedback. Because you know what? There's going to be positive feedback as well.
Yeah, yeah,
and
sure.
We know the current social verse, right? Almost anything you do is exactly. going to have a negative tone to it, right?
Sure.
It is
here's
the
cure for everything. You know?
Right? Yeah. Right. It is what it is. So the hard part is don't get trapped in that short term when there's going to be all kinds of feedback, good and bad, right? Mm-hmm. But ultimately, in the short and midterm, if we did our job, all it simply means is any fan who wanted a uniform update, which was 80, 90% of them, right? Can find one uniform out of the four and just go, they listened, that's what I wanted. If we do that, regardless of retail sales or digital engagement or video views or,
right.
or PR mentions, that was the whole mission. The fans wanted change. The fans told us they wanted four very different things that we had to solve for. So if they can look at them and just go, y'all listened, y'all did it. Thank you, Texans. We did our job.
Do you have a definitive favorite? I know I do.
Are you guy picks your favorite child?
Pretty yeah, much, yeah.
Okay.
Then, one of them's in LA and one's in Houston. One's definitely a favorite.
Okay.
Ooh. Wow.
Oh my God.
I'm kidding.
I'm sending this
on
audio.
The week. Ooh. But no, everybody's got a favorite.
Everyone's got a favorite. So you know, again, it's personal bias, right? Yeah, something for everybody. Because I'm into the arts and I'm into bolder things, that naturally leads me to look at, call it the Battle Red Alternate and the New Color Rush, because they're just different.
Right.
And we definitely took some risks on them between the designs, between the helmets, leveraging the new NFL 3 helmet rule, right? All those things that, for me, being a little bit more progressive in design and personal taste, I go to those two and I'm like, ooh, all day.
Right. Okay. Yeah. All right. So one more for you, Doug. We talked about H-Town. So other than sports, give me a favorite or two event or thing about Houston that you like to do or love about the city or something that's really gotten a hold of you since you've moved here.
You know what? Like I said, between arts, music, heck, all the urban parks we have that take my new little rescue dog out there for walks,
oh,
right?
Oh, nice.
But, you know, I probably would say, you know, because it's most recent. I love recency. I went to my first Houston rodeo.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right? And as, yes, someone who's from Philadelphia had never experienced a rodeo before, it blew my mind.
Mm-hmm. It'll shock you a little bit.
It blew my mind from, obviously, the festival grounds, mm-hmm. but to then just the whole entertainment and all the programming. And, you know, again, as someone who's not used to the culture of, like, I don't know all the appropriate terms, but the cattle roundup, right?
Yeah.
You can win scholarships for catching cattle.
Yeah, calf scramble.
The calf scramble, there we go.
Mm-hmm. You got to love mutton busting.
Yes. Right? Like these are things culturally all new to me.
Yeah.
So for me, like that was just an amazing experience of like, there's this whole side of H-Town, right? That we talk about music and we talk about Bun and Paul and Slim and Kiki and Flip and others. And then this whole other side mm-hmm. that's rodeo and a little bit of Western and timeless tradition there, all in the same place together and at the rodeo coexisting. Right. When you look at a Bun B night, right?
Yep.
All coexisting. So to me, most recently, that was probably my number one favorite experience because it is something I've never seen before. And it was just moment after moment. I was like, what are they doing now? So major props to our friends over here at NRG at the rodeo.
Yep. All right, very cool. Tuesday, we look forward to it, Doug. So the general public, what should they be expecting? I know there's a gathering for some, so tell us about that.
Yeah, so 10 a.m. launch on
10
Tuesday.
10 a.m.
10 a.m. So finally, within 5 minutes, everything will be out there to the world, right?
Okay.
So we're launched digitally at 10 a.m., which also means, hey, if you don't want to wait, you can come to NRG Stadium and come to the team shop at 10 a.m. We got you.
Ooh.
Right? So the store's actually going to be closed Saturday and Monday to reset the entire store.
Okay.
So it's going to look like, from a merch-wise, let alone just the uniforms, whole new store Tuesday morning, 10 a.m.
That is going to be interesting.
So fans will be able to get their hands on it first. And obviously, you know, our .com shop will have the new ones as well.
Yeah.
But if you got to have it right then, 10 a.m. is the place to be. Then, of course, Tuesday night, 6:30 start, 713 Music Hall. We have an amazing lineup that we haven't announced yet, right? Four performers. Each performer is going to highlight one of the new uniforms and maybe be accompanied by a player or two for each one of those uniforms. So it'll be a really cool experience. It's really just a celebration. It's a moment in our history. And who knows the next time we're going to do this. So it was just a really great party to celebrate everyone's been part of it. And at 713, yes, we couldn't invite everyone, but we're still able to pack in a couple thousand fans in there to have a good time and party together.
Yep. We'll be live from there 6 to 7. Looking forward to it. Doug, thanks a lot.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
10 a.m. Tuesday, baby. That's when you can get it. And I had a chance to I can't say that, can I? I can't let any secrets out of the bag. There's so many things that I want to tell you, but I can't. 10 a.m. Tuesday, Team Shop, that's when they're going to be revealed. And it's going to be, I got to admit, it's going to be awesome just to kind of like, all right, here they are. Everybody see them. Everybody react to them. I'm curious to see what the reaction is going to be. For me, it'll take like 5 minutes. Like, okay, everybody good? Everybody good? All right, let's go play ball. Because that's what it's going to mean. And then 2 nights later, it's your draft party and we're all good. That's the way I look at it. But you know how I look at things. I look at things in a football sense. But I'm still curious. I'm still a fan. I want to see what they end up looking like. But, you know, let's go. It's time to move on. But there has been a lot of work done by a lot of people in this thing. We appreciate Doug for stopping by and giving us the background, everything going on. And it's going to be really cool once those jerseys are fully revealed and then the merch is available. That's when I'm getting excited. When the merch becomes available, if there's anything on the good old debit card, it's going to be plunked down for some Texans gear for sure on Tuesday as soon as I can get over to the team store. I might have to fight some people to get over there, but I am going to do it. Okay, we get back. We'll go around the NFL. There is a 30 visit that's happening in the nation's capital that is really intriguing. I'll explain what that means and what it is next right here on Texans All Access. What's happening, everybody? Welcome back to this Wednesday edition of Texans All Access from Monday Texans Radio Studio. I'm your host, John Harris, football analyst, sideline reporter for your Houston Texans. Let's go around the NFL and start in Washington, where it's going to get interesting, pick number two. Now, a lot of people have penciled in, well, they're writing in pen a quarterback. It's just a matter of what quarterback's name is going to be at number two for the Washington Commanders in this upcoming draft. Who will it be? Because we know Chicago is going to take Caleb Williams unless we get thrown a total curveball on draft night, and I don't see that happening. Now, what could happen at two? A lot of things. So the Commanders have taken a kind of a different approach. They are having what is being referred to as a mass 30 visit. And that visit includes North Carolina quarterback Drake May, LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels, Washington quarterback Michael Penix Jr., and Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy. They are going to go to Topgolf for a casual dinner and mixer, just get together. They'll have 20 potential draftees in town, and they'll all be at the facility tomorrow. Now, I don't know how I feel about that. Now, I know how I feel about the one hire they made a couple days ago. My man Dave Gardy going to be with them as the director of football initiative there with the Commanders. I love my man Dave. He's going to be awesome with them. But bringing in all these prospects, very interesting that they're doing this and doing it this particular manner. I mean, does it become kind of like Thunderdome? I mean, I don't know. But they're going to be bringing in four potential quarterbacks. Adam Schefter said probably about a week ago that you Commanders fans, go get your Commanders unis with Jaden Daniels' name on it. Dan Jeremiah did a conference call today with media members, and he said, I don't know. You need to be careful with that one because they could potentially looking at an offensive lineman, which they definitely need. Now, they need a quarterback too. There's no doubt about that. But they're going to take quarterback. I mean, all of this posturing and whatever they're doing, preening and posturing, they're just going to end up taking a quarterback. And I think that's pretty clear, but I don't know. Maybe it's not. Maybe to some people it's not. But I think they're going to end up taking a quarterback. You know, the Texans didn't play any of that last year for the most part. They just kept it quiet. And nobody knew. And the thing was, is the silence really is what drove people. Well, the Texans aren't talking about this. Well, that must mean this. Well, that must mean this. Well, that must mean no. None of you anticipated it. The only person that got close was Daniel Jeremiah when his final mock draft, he had the Texans drafting 2 and 3. He just had the order reversed.
He had Will Anderson going two, and he had C.J. Stroud going three. And I said it at the time. I remember seeing it. We were talking it down in the studio before the draft that night. And I said, hey, he's got it backwards. Because if you let Stroud be on the board at three, then you're going to allow other teams to get involved in that trade mix. You got to flip it around. Take Stroud out of the mix. Limit teams that will get involved with the Cardinals. Limit how much you're going to have to give to them in a trade. Then make the deal for Will. They did that. And the rest, hopefully, will end up being history down the road. So we'll see how it ends up on the Texans side. But Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix. Those guys all in Washington at the same time. It's been interesting kind of sifting through some of the stuff that's going on with all these smoke screens and who likes who and all this kind of stuff. One popped up today from Bob McGinn, who's now writing for Tyler Dunn's Go Long, and he talked about Adonai Mitchell. And apparently Adonai Mitchell from Texas has type 1 diabetes. And scouts have been not hammering him, but like, okay, something's off. Like even some of the anonymous quotes of the scouts are like, something's off with this guy. Like he can be belligerent. He can be difficult. Well, then they come to find out a lot of those times are happening when his blood sugar goes down. So it's kind of like mental health. Are teams willing to take a player, a really, really good player like Adonai Mitchell, even though he's got something that is absolutely manageable? My man Drew Doherty, he absolutely crushes it and works every single day. He's been dealing with it since he was a kid. Now that they know what to do, they've got to make sure they monitor it and do those things. But man, NFL people have got people on people on people to help with those sort of things. So where does Adonai Mitchell go? Does he fall in this draft? And if he ends up falling to 42, is he too good to pass up? It's going to be interesting to watch this whole draft process unfold. Your Texans sit at 42 and 59 today. I think it changes. I'm not sure which pick, but I think one of those picks changes. I hope it's not 42. I want to get to them making a pick as soon as possible. So we'll see what happens. A big thanks to Mark. A big thanks to all of you for listening. A big thanks to Senior VP of Marketing Communications and Ticketing, Doug Vosick, for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. And as always, go Texans.